Today on Rambling About Cars, the BMW M1 successor is here, and it's a crossover, maybe?
Don't call it that.
There's a new Genesis G90. There's a spaceship from Hennessy. I don't know if we can say it any other way. And we're going to catch up with some listener suggestions that we've been meaning to do for a while. We're going to do that the entire month of December, and we're starting today with car brands that need to come back. So, fantastic fans. It's podcast time. I'm Christopher Smith, and across the way, Mr. Chris Bruce.
How's it going, everybody? And yeah, we're going to get things started. We're going to get the ball rolling with the BMW XM, which, yeah, I guess in a history sort of way, I guess we have to call it the successor to the X1.
I'm going by what our colleague Jeff Perez said in his, because he wrote this up, right?
That's how he led his story, and I understand why he did it that way, but that's a hell of a leap. But here we are.
It is. I mean, I think it's technically correct. This is a specific M vehicle. This isn't like a 3 Series done up. Has an M3. It is M, right? I mean, it's called XM, and we should also point out this is a concept. This isn't going into production yet, but it will. BMW tells us that it will go into production. And it's large, it's goofy, but it's got quite a bit of power.
Yes.
If you're going to follow up on the M1, you got to have something with some guts. And this has,
if you're gonna put an M badge on anything, it's got to have some guts.
I mean, to a degree, I suppose. This has 750 guts, mm-hmm. has in 750 hybrid horsepower. It's not electric. It's a plug-in hybrid.
Yep.
750 horsepower. What's the torque on that? 737 pound-feet of torque.
Yep.
A 30 mile EV only range. If you just want to run on electricity for a concept, Bruce, BMW is oddly specific with details. So, I mean, that tells you, yeah, this is technically a concept, but BMW has already said it's going into production and it's going to be.
So we're expecting a debut in late 22, 2023 model year. We don't know for sure, but it'll either go on sale in super late 2022 or very, very early 2023.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the elephant in the room, though, and that's the styling. You're right. The powertrain is impressive. Twin turbo V8, hybrid assistance, bunch of power, bunch of torque. But
it literally is an elephant in the room. I mean, that's fair to say, isn't it? It's polarizing. We've been seeing that a lot.
Yeah. And like Jeff said in the story, and he's absolutely right. It doesn't look like any other BMW before or since. I guess you could say, in the 70s and stuff, BMW kind of had chiseled styling, but even then, It was a very raw version of chiseled, whereas here you've got lines all over. I'm specifically looking at the line at like the C and D pillar that kind of jolts mm-hmm. upward. It's got just all sorts of lines and creases and embossed sections and things like that, that it does not look like any other BMW, for better or worse. I honestly, the more I look at it, the more I kind of like it.
I don't know if like is the word there. Maybe accept. it is what it is. BMW is embracing a certain styling language that I don't think a lot of people agree with. If I had to describe it in one word, I would say busy.
Yes.
There are so many different angles, lines going in all different directions, trying to communicate I don't know what to the onlooker that's trying to behold this thing. And of course it has the big kidney grill up front. At least it's a big vehicle, so it sort of fits there. I mean, I don't hate it. It's not something that I absolutely hate. I certainly don't like it.
I think the point is to be eye-catching, and I think it achieves that. I think you think about seeing this on the road And there's not going to be another vehicle that looks like this that you see, assuming the production version looks like this. You know, I bet the production version will have real headlights rather than the kind of the little slits that we see, see here. You know, it'll have probably real door handles, stuff like that. But if BMW is saying that the production is coming, the production version is coming as soon as late next year, it's going to be close. And this thing is just going to be, it's going to dominate your eyes on the road because it doesn't look like anything else. And I think for BMW, that's something that's important because they want to be kind of set themselves apart from the crowd.
Yeah, but you want to stand out for the right reasons, not for, I mean, if I, let's just say theoretically, if I put a bale of hay in the backseat of the Mustang, left the top up, maybe doused it with a little bit of gasoline just for fun, lit it on fire and drove around town, I would be the center of attention.
You would be.
It's not any sort of attention that I would want, but you know, it goes back to the whole idea of any publicity is good publicity, right? No, I don't believe.
Kinda.
I don't believe that one tiny moment.
Well,
just we're talking about different it, for being the sake of being different. I'm not following BMW on this one, you know.
I'm a bit more optimistic. I think this is, you're right, this is different. I don't think it's different for different sake. We've kind of been talking about, I mean, think about the latest M3, the 4 Series. Like, those have kind of been big flops in terms of the way people are reacting to the styling. And the fact that they're doing something so completely different, it's kind of good news to me because it shows that BMW might be listening to people and might be considering different ways that their vehicles can look. And I agree with you. I don't love this, but I could see myself liking it once I get used to seeing them on the road. But real quick here, I wanted to point out the interior, is insane. We've been looking at it for a few minutes on YouTube now because I paused it here. So this is the rear seat, which you can see is
this
teal turquoise, like crushed velour.
It's satin. Velvet. The back seat is velvet.
Yeah.
It's legit velvet. This can't be production. This this can't go to production. And I know a lot of people might be thinking, well, you're talking about a concept like this is going to be the production vehicle and it's a concept. Well, BMW has already said the design of this XM is like 90% production ready. It's not going to vary that much. At least
it could look like this, but it's not going to have this material choice where you're looking at it now. It has a blue headliner, a turquoise seat cover. It looks like green floor mats and then brown leather front seats. Like, they're never going to sell a car like that because no person in their right mind who's not blind would buy it.
Well, but you know, as you just said, BMW's trying to be different. If you're going to be different on the outside, I mean, there's something to be said for being different on the inside.
And like you said, you can be too different, and this is too different.
But let me jump back to that point, too.
Okay,
On the outside, is this really that different? I mean, we've come to expect kind of wonky, chunky styling from BMW, and that's kind of what we have here. I wouldn't argue that this is extraordinarily different just for the sake of being different. I'm not even sure if it's really that different. I mean, when you look at the spy photos we've seen of the upcoming X7, I mean, it has kind of that, you know, the very narrow headlights like we see here. It's got that big kind of square chin. It has all kinds of contrasting lines like this. I don't know that it's really that different from what we've been seeing from BMW.
I disagree. Let me pull up, while we're here talking about this, let me pull up a picture of a current X7.
Okay.
Obviously, we don't know what it looks like after the refresh. You know, we've got some ideas, but
While you're doing that, I can tell people, I mean, the concept, it has 23-inch wheels. It's a two-row, despite its size, it's a two-row crossover. I don't know if there's any plans to make a three row out of it, but
I bet the production version will at least be available as a three row. We have heard rumors of kind of like the Maybach GLS that you would be able to get a two row, super opulent interior, just depending,
which is kind of what we have right now. And and being just an M, you know, like, I mean, can you call it a successor to the M1? I mean, no, obviously I'm not going to do
that.
Not.
You're never going to get me to do that.
It's not, but with its position as being this kind of flagship.
So M here's vehicle, a current,
I mean, it's going to be just crazy opulent.
Here's a current X7, and you're right. There are kind of those chiseled lines, but not like what we're seeing on this. It's an evolution, certainly. That's
the current, but the spy photos of the next gen, far, far more chiseled than that, man.
Hold on.
Far more chiseled than that. I know. I'm making you do some work here. Do you want me to pull up some images? I know what I'm talking about.
No, I know. Trust me. I've written about them, too. It's just that.
I don't know. Yes, it's different, but I don't think it's BMW really being that different. I think it's BMW. If to be completely frank, I think it's still BMW just losing their mind. Like,
but no, this is a refresh,
and we're all going to be dead in 10 years anyways. Let's just like design everything with slide rules, you know.
Let's not get that dark. But you can see here, this is a refresh where the front especially is going to get a bit more angular. The rear kind of barely, it's still not as extreme as what we're seeing on the XM to my eyes.
No, it's not as extreme, but I could see the next generation easily going direction that XM is.
Especially if this is the new design language. Like, honestly, I look at the XM and I think a 3 Series with those lines, it would almost be almost like E30-ish to me. I could be on board with that. It could work.
I'm going to reserve judgment until we know a little bit more.
Fair. That's totally fair. Because we don't know. Maybe this could be a one-off. This could be a fluke. Or this is the future. We don't know. That's totally true. But it's worth looking at.
You know, when you look at the front of an M4.
I'd rather not.
Well, you're about to, because I'm about to share this. Okay. When you look at the front of an M4, I mean, tell me, do you see a fair amount of XM in the front of this M4? Because I do. I mean, I think you got just kind of the chiseled look. You got the bonkers lines going in different directions. No, we're talking about a coupe versus a big crossover SUV, right?
Right.
But I still, there's a lot more similarity going on there that I think people realize.
I don't see it personally. But, you know, aesthetics are all just a matter of how you look at things, and everyone looks at things differently. And so you're not wrong. I'm not wrong. It's just a matter of kind of how you see things. So
I think we agree
to disagree on this one. And
well, I think we can agree that it's not pretty.
No, it's not pretty.
It's I don't know. Maybe
it's
not
pretty, but it might be interesting.
Maybe they were like, you know, that Cybertruck looks pretty cool. Maybe we could do something.
I hope that's not what they were thinking. But now that you mention it, you've kind of planted that in my brain. I hope that's not what happened, but okay.
Hey, you never know. You want to move on to something a little more...
A lot more attractive?
A little more... Well...
I love this thing.
It's beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
Decide. Exactly. We'll let the people decide. Fantastic. This is the next generation, Genesis G90. So far, we have only seen the exterior in terms of the production version. We do have spy shots of the interior that I'll show in just a second. And so this is new. This is the new Genesis flagship sedan. So the ones you see here in blue, this is the long wheelbase version. So it's stretched even more.
7.5 inches longer on the wheelbase, which you think 7.5 inches, that's not really that much.
That's a lot.
In car speak, that's a lot. I mean, that's definitely going to be going after, you know, the Maybachs and those high-end luxury vehicles where you get in the back and you have the lounge seats in the back that have recliners. And I mean, obviously it has the Genesis motif of the two strip lights, the big shield grill up front there. I mean, I like it. I don't know. The rear kind of looks a little funky to me when you get back there.
The white one we're seeing here, this is the normal wheelbase. And then the blue one is the long wheelbase. But yeah, I see what you're saying. I think the rear pillar is kind of the weakest part of the design, I guess. But everything else, I like it so much. I love the way the light signatures go. You get broken up by the fender and then continue on into the sides. Like,
oh, I love that. Like everything from the B pillar forward is spot on. It has a very organic look to me, but as you move further back, it goes from organic kind of back to that chiseled look. And I almost get the impression that they were like, let's make this sort of look like a Rolls Royce, but not too much. When you get to the back, because it just kind of has those rear haunches that they just, it's a little Rolls Royce to me.
So two things. First, I think part of what's coming from that is, I bet now that I'm looking at it, especially from this angle, I bet headroom was a concern, rear headroom specifically. Because if you look at the way this is, the roof isn't so much flowing as it gets to the C pillar and then it quickly angles downward. So the effect that you get of that is you maximize rear seat headroom, but then you have to have this kind of awkward angle at the back. And I wonder if that's what they were considering.
They could have solved that with a different design for those rear windows at the back, instead of throwing that little up kink there at the back, bringing that window, circling it a little bit further down instead of narrowing the greenhouse back there.
Also, I think
that would have helped.
Our boss Adrian and I both agree that the wheels look fantastic, but we never want to have to clean them.
That's what a power washer is for.
Yeah, I guess so. Like,
just get in there, power wash.
It's such like an abstract design. Like, it almost looks like a Pollock painting or something like that. Like there's no symmetry to it at all, but it still looks really good. It also looks like a pain in the ass to clean.
I'm just not a fan of most modern wheels. It's like car design. They're trying to over design it. There's too much going on there.
I was supposed to be the contrarian on this show, and you're taking all my things today. I'm the one that's liking all this stuff.
We've swapped roles here. I'm Chris Bruce. You're Christopher Smith.
I guess so.
When it comes to wheels, for me, I've always been about just simpler is better. There are a lot of modern wheels. It's like that. Anything that has the snowflake effect where you've got five spokes and then like another set of five spokes behind that's just a little bit offset. There's too much going on there for a wheel.
I agree on a performance car, but on a luxury car like this, you should look opulent. And this looks like you have to pay someone to clean them, probably because you do. And that's what's cool about it.
I don't know that it looks opulent though. I mean, it looks interesting. For me, opulent has always been like a really nice wire wheel. Maybe I'm old fashioned in that respect.
Those are hard to clean too.
Yeah, they sure are, aren't they? The best things never come easy, man.
So let me make sure I'm still.
And yeah, I mean, yes. We should. I think we pointed it out, but I'll just mention it again. This has just been an exterior reveal.
Correct.
Genesis and really, I mean, Hyundai, that's the parent company there. They've really taken to debuting vehicles in stages. And that might be one of my grievances that I write up here in the coming weeks when we do our annual Festivus airing of the grievances.
It's annoying.
If you're going to debut a car, debut the damn car.
Right.
Don't show us the outside. And then, oh, well, we'll tell you about the interior later. And, oh, we'll tell you about the engine later. No, debut the car.
So what we're looking at here, if you're watching on YouTube now, is this is a spy shot of the interior. And if you can't tell, it's because there's all this fabric and there are just random wires everywhere. Like, there's a business card sticking out. Like, clearly this is not what it's going to look like. But it's
a business card holder. That's exactly why it's there.
I guess if you're driving this, you should have a nice business card, but it tells you can see, you know, a two-spoke steering wheel. You've got digital instrument cluster, which is almost now just a standard thing on cars, but especially in this class. You've got an infotainment screen that we can't really see here because it's kind of undercover. And then you've got digital controls for the heating and ventilation down below.
And it does look like There are some, just a few tactile controls. Looks like some of the basic functions.
Yeah, increasing the heat and stuff like that. Yep. Otherwise, they all look capacitive to me.
Yep.
But yeah.
I mean, just a few basic old school controls. I mean, I don't think it looks bad, and it beats the hell out of trying to look down at a screen where you can't just intuitively touch and go by feel. Especially trying to dig through screens of an infotainment system just to do something as simple as change the temperature or change a blower motor speed, you know?
So. And if you look on the steering wheel here, you can see a big paddle here, another yep. one here. So you are going to have buttons and controls right on the steering wheel that, you know, if you're driving one of these, that's going to be able to handle a lot of those things that you'd want to do.
And obviously, since this is just an exterior reveal, we don't know anything about power. We don't know anything about price.
No, nothing about price. The speculation is that the power, let me double check that I'm getting this right, that it will be shared with the GV80. Mm-hmm. Let me double check. Yeah, that it would be shared, the twin turbocharged 3.5 liter V6 from the GV80 that makes 375 horsepower, 391 pound-feet of torque, and an electric version, it reportedly comes later. Again, that's all kind of speculation for now, since they're not, Genesis isn't telling us for sure, but that's the guess from the information that we have.
But yeah, I mean, that's all going to be coming soon. Like I said, I wish they would just reveal the damn car. And I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one who feels that way. So yeah, well, speaking of revealing a whole damn car, should we jump to the bonkers portion of rambling about cars?
Yeah.
This week, because Hennessy came up with something a little different, and by a little different, I mean, are we talking like a spaceship? I mean, this is actually called Hennessy Deep Project Space. Deep Space. It's not a spaceship. It's a car. It's a 6-wheeled car.
Yep.
With seating for 4, 2 of which are right smack in the middle of the car. So think like McLaren F1, your 3-row, you know, seating with a McLaren F1 where the driver's in the middle, 2 passengers are back on the side, but then one more seat at the very back, and that's for the VVIP.
Yeah.
And if you're wondering what the hell is VVIP, Hennessy says that's for the very, very important person, not just the VIP. No. That's the very, very important person. And we are not making this up.
And I got to steal a joke from this image we're looking at here. Our boss, Adrian, commented, it looks like the passenger here, judging by the drawing, is sitting on a toilet. And he's not wrong. It's just because of how they sketched it. Obviously, they didn't shade that in brown, but
here's the thing. Like
the passenger sitting on a toilet.
There wasn't anybody sitting on that seat because the other 3 seats are soiled with urine and feces. That's why they're a brown color. And that one is just white. Well, I mean, think about it. Hennessy says this is going to be hyper. What does he call it?
A hyper GT is what they're
hyper GT about. Car. It has 6 wheels, just, you know, 2 in the front with then a set 4 of 4 at the back. It's electric, and each wheel will have its own motor. There's no mention of power, but you figure it's Hennessy. They're gonna do like 5,000 horsepower. I have no idea if that's going to be the case or not. Obviously, this is just a sketch at this point.
Right. It's literally 2 drawings. It's a drawing of the vehicle in profile and of the passenger cabin.
And so, I mean, I'll say this. I'll give Hennessy credit here. I love the way this looks. Bruce, we're kind of nerds in an anime sort of way. Is this not something you would expect to see in an anime? Like some anime character driving?
So
with the gull wings and the 6 wheels, I mean, the only thing missing is an extra set of wheels up front. And this could come like right out of the latest, you know, Japanese animation craze.
Yeah, late 1980s. Yeah. No, there's a specific one that I can't think of off the top of my head. This does look like it. Also, if anyone's familiar, it looks a lot like something that Sid Mead would do. He was a famous industrial designer from the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. Mostly he did the Tron light cycle. He did the designs for Blade Runner. He did stuff like that. And it looks right in his wheelhouse.
It has a very, very short overhang in front. Then with two massive gullwing doors, and then a just a very, very long swooping backside. Obviously, you're going to need space to carry the four wheels back there. But Hennessy says this is going to be a thing. It's not just some sort of fancy whim. They're saying it's going to go into production in 2026, which, okay, we've got a few years to maybe rethink this idea. And they're going to build 105 all total at a cost of $3 million each.
I wish them luck. I don't know if I believe them.
There is a little sense of vaporware, but I mean, you have to start somewhere, right? I mean, from what I gather, they've started with two drawings. I would prefer, if I was doing something like this, I would prefer to have something a little more concrete than two drawings. And maybe Hennessy does. We don't know. We've certainly seen some pretty crazy projects from them in the past, putting six-wheel drive on pretty much every truck that's out there. Mm-hmm. And hey, they've been working steadily on the Venom, on the F5. Those are now into production. There was a bit of a delay there, but I mean Hennessy so far, I mean, they haven't really just kind of walked away. So could we see this crazy electric car in 2026?
We'll see. Time, but here, real quick, I referenced Sid Mead. I just want to give him credit where credit's due. He passed away in 2019, but famous industrial designer, a very similar kind of looking vehicle. You can see very slow slung with the gull wing doors and things. Yeah. So we got a shot there, and that was an image that he did. And then here is his sketch for the spinners from Blade Runner. And again, you can definitely see a little bit of that styling going on. So
I do get some of that, but the first time I saw it, I was just like, wow, Hennessy's been watching a lot of anime.
There's one if I think of it when I'm writing this post, I'll try to pull the gif up there. It's in my head and I don't know what
there
it's
are
from.
there are so many I've seen where there's something like that that's popped up. It's the six wheel drive. It's the four wheels at the back, or I've also seen four wheels at the front and then two at the back, some combination of six wheel drive. As I was thinking about it too, we have cars like the Tesla Model S Plaid, gobs of power, claim 0 to 60, 1.9 seconds on a prep surface, obviously. I guess if you're running six wheels though, I mean, if you're going to be making some crazy fast hypercar and you want to get extra power to the ground, there are two ways to do it. One, you have just big sticky tires on a big sticky track, or two, you just freaking add tires, right? So
that is a solution.
So maybe there's something there. 2026, folks. If anybody's listening that has time travel capability, I'm very curious to know.
Yeah, tell us if it got made, because I want to know.
So jump in. You can email us about it, podcast@motorone.com. You can also comment on our debut articles for the new episodes that go up every Friday on motorone.com's website. And yes, you should be going to Motor One Podcast, our YouTube channel, liking, smashing the subscribe, the notification, any button that's on there that looks like, okay, I need to push this thing, do that. Because we do have our subscriber challenge that is still going on. We need a lot. We need 1,000. We need 1,000 subscribers by the end of the year, and we now have 1 month to go. If we get 1,000 subscribers by the end of 2021, Bruce and I will do
anything you tell us to do. Whatever
you tell us to do. So, I mean, that's pretty golden opportunity right there. Within reason, of course. You know, no, I'm not going to jump naked off of a bridge.
I would actually probably, well, not in January, I wouldn't. It was in July, I might do that.
Wow, okay, I'm learning something new right here. Jumping naked off a bridge?
That wouldn't bother me.
Okay, point being, Point being, you need to go subscribe. You need to tell your friends to subscribe. If for no other reason than to see or not see one of us jump naked off a bridge.
I'm assuming there's a body of water underneath, by the way, just to make that clear. But
anyway. I didn't say that. I didn't say that.
That's a big caveat.
Could be assumed. So do we're going to talk about some comments here, aren't we?
We're going to talk about
or at least an email.
In particular, I want to put a bunch of time into, because this person wrote us a very long letter. He's someone who hasn't commented before, and he's got problems like I have problems. So I want to address, maybe my knowledge and your knowledge can help him.
I agree. I've got it right here if you want me to jump into it.
Yeah, sure. Let's just refer to him as Tim from Cincinnati, just in case he doesn't want his name out there.
So yep. We'll keep it nice and anonymous. Tim, thank you very much for the email. Tim writes, "Hi guys, really enjoy your show. As someone who is rapidly developing an interest in cars, I find your show entertaining and approachable." Well, thank you very much. It might get even more entertaining if Bruce jumps off a bridge naked. "I appreciate the wide range of knowledge you have of cars over a variety of decades, styles, and price points. A few questions for you. Here we go. My first question is the following. How do I move forward with this hobby, this interest, talking about cars? Given the high cost of purchasing a new car, not to mention the added challenge of inflation in today's market, how does one find sufficiently varied, sufficiently frequent, and sufficiently relevant experiences to keep it interesting?" Oh boy, do I have a good answer for that one. "I enjoy drooling over the specs of the next generation Corvette, Cayman, etc., as much as the next enthusiast. However, in the end, it's somewhat unsatisfying," and you're absolutely right. "It seems to me that depth and experience are important factors to focus on in order to make cars meaningful and interesting in the long run. Cost makes this difficult." Do we want to answer that question before jumping into the second part here?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
I'll take it.
Okay.
So, you go, Tim, first. I would say a couple things. First off, you can't let the new shiny things overwhelm what you're seeing. You have to understand what it is that you like, what it is that you want, what it is that you want to do, and then focus in on that. And here's what I mean by that. Much like you, I cannot afford a new C8 Corvette or a Cayman or anything like that. That's just not realistic. But I can afford, you know, a $5,000 or $10,000 car off of Craigslist. However, and this actually goes into your second question, I don't have the space for that. It's just not realistic for me right now. So what I would say to you is that there's nothing wrong, and I said this several episodes ago, you can be a car enthusiast and never drive a car. There's nothing saying that car enthusiasts have to own or drive cars. So whether that means getting into sim racing, whether that means building models, whether that means getting into automotive history or any of those things, there are all sorts of ways that you can enjoy cars and not actually drive one. Here, watch.
Uh-oh.
I built this like a month ago. It took several months. I hope that's on camera because I'm not looking at my camera right now. Yeah,
yep.
It is.
Yep. Your little Subaru is amazing. That is what year? That's a 1/25 scale plastic model Subaru.
Yeah, it'd be like an 87.
It's an 87.
87.
XT6, right?
XT Turbo, because it's got
the XT Turbo.
Thing.
Okay.
Yeah, it's got the XT6 or XT Turbo thing on it.
But okay. Yeah.
But I'm just saying that to express your love of cars and also automotive art, whether it's posters of races that you like or brochures of cars that you've liked, there are all sorts of ways to express your love and your interest of cars that has nothing to do with driving one and it's nothing to do with owning one. Because much like you, I'm in that same position where, you know, a cheap, fun car is financially within my bounds. It is not spatially within my bounds. And I've learned to deal with that in different ways. And I read your question. I'm like, oh, you have the same type of anxiety that I have. Because honestly, I go through this, and I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with you, because I go through this exact same feeling a couple times a year where I see some car on Craigslist or Cars and Bids or Bring a Trailer, eBay, what have you. I'm like, I would really like to have that. And it just comes down to, okay, can I financially pull the trigger? Yes. Do I want to deal with whatever, you know, issues I'm going to have to finding a spot for it? And for me so far in my life, the answer has been no. I'm not saying that's always going to be the case. If a 1980, the lime green Mazda RX-7 came up for sale and it was like $5,000 and it was 20 miles away, it would be mine as soon as I could write the check or send the guy the PayPal money. Like I wouldn't be able to hold back. But that specific car that just ignites my passion hasn't come up for me. So I have been fine to find that in other ways. And your second question, we'll go even deeper into that. So Smith, your turn, because I know you have a very different answer than me.
I do. But actually, let me go ahead and read the rest of this here with the second question, because I think it all kind of applies here. So,
yeah.
Tim's second question is a practical one that relates to the first. I am fortunate to own a BMW Z4 M Roadster. Very nice car. Nice. And a 20 Honda Accord has my daily.
Nice car too.
Owned it since new. The Z4 is really, really great. I get a huge amount of pleasure from it. 20 minutes on the back road in that car, and I am a new man recovered from a tough day at work. The Accord is fantastically practical, but not that fun. In light of the long-term desire to nurture this hobby, here are the options I'm considering. Any thoughts? 1, sell the Accord, try to find a used 911, if even possible. Total budget, $40,000 to $45,000. You could find a decent used 911 in that
range. Get to his downside, though. He could get the money. It's the downside.
Upside, new experience, nurturing the hobby, and a fun car replaces the Accord. Downside, lose practicality. Have a family of 4. More money spent. Yeah.
Tim, family of 4. You're not saying, like, maybe you're divorced, single, whatever. So you have a wife, partner, whatever, that has a vehicle. But if you have a family of 4, a 911 is just not going to do it.
The 911 would have to replace the BMW as the fun car.
Yeah.
The second option here, learn to wrench on cars. I like this one. Buy a $10,000 used something, preferably German, if this option, what Those I should buy. There. Put a lift in the garage. Upside, new experience, new skills, long-term projects. Depth, downside, 3 cars seems like a lot, not to mention my wife's old SUV.
Okay.
Big time commitment. Totally new to wrenching. Third option, do nothing. Enjoy the practicality of the Accord. Upside, simple, no further expenditures. Downside, no further car experiences. As an aside, I'm taking a performance driving course in the spring. That is an epic idea. I recommend everybody do that, because you will never, ever learn as much about driving as you will doing something like that. I doubt I'll ever be a track guy, but willing to give it a shot. If you do this and you're interested in cars, you're going to become a track guy. Sorry, once it gets in there, it's hard to get out. Your wisdom would be appreciated. Open to any option, any car, even if it's not listed. Keep up the great work. Tim, thank you very much for this email. Let me kind of roll through my answer here.
Okay.
And I'm going through experience. It kind of relates to your second option of getting something cheaper, working on it a little bit. I've owned something like 32, 33 cars in the last 20 years or so. And it started innocently enough when I'm in college. I had an older Toro show that I'd done some work on. I didn't want to drive it through a Michigan winter. So I thought, well, I'll just buy some cheap winter beater and just drive that around. And I happened to work at a used car dealer. I was learning a bit about mechanics and just kind of how engines tick and how they work. And I was learning about reconditioning. So this was a whole learning process for me, as kind of you're talking about there. I was living in a rented townhome. I had one stall in a shared garage. And then my wife had her car and I had my car. And we had space outside to park, but I went ahead and I got, I got like a Dodge Spirit that first year. I paid $400 for it. The car was uninspiring, but I bought the car for $400. I did a little bit of cleanup on it. I drove it. I didn't hate driving it, but I mean, it, like I said, it wasn't inspiring. But the point being, I worked on a little bit.
It lacked spirit.
It lacked. Oh, Bruce. Oh, that jumping off the bridge sounds like a good idea now. But by the time I was done in the spring, I had it cleaned up. I had it looking pretty good. I'd fixed just a few basic things on the engine. A couple larger things that I couldn't handle, I had a friend of mine do for you know, just a nominal fee, and I sold it for like $1,800. So I made about, by the time I figured in what I put into it, I made like $600 or $700 on the car. You know, I flipped it, and that started a cheap used car addiction that opened up this whole additional wonderful world of automotive experience, of this whole new world of experiencing not brand spanking new crisp performers, but seasoned vehicles that over the course of 10 or 15 or 20 years develop their own interesting character. And it got to the point where I absolutely loved that. Even if it was a fairly uninspiring car, when you take 20 Honda Civics, brand new, on a dealer lot, sitting side by side, they're identical. You take those same 20 Civics, move them 20 years down the road, each one is different, each one is unique. And I learned to love learning about these individual cars, like this one where you have to bump the door just the right way to get the window to work. I mean, things that are annoying, but it's what gives these cars character. And I went from that first Spirit. And by the way, once I flipped that and made some money, my wife was like, "That's cool. Can I have a winter car too?" I was like, "Yeah, if you want to work on it, that's cool."
You're mean, man.
Well, we had our share of winter cars, and she knows. No, she's awesome. She does a little bit of work on cars.
Okay.
Cool. And she, more importantly, she nurtured my used car addiction, and that's legit what it was and what it is, because every 6 to 12 months I was moving into something else. But I learned to kind of watch the market, and I gained a really good knowledge of vehicle prices, of values. So I could pick out a vehicle that I thought, okay, that's a pretty good price. I can look past the blasted off clear coat. I can sand that down and just do a quick refinish on the clear coat. I can yank the seats out, give the interior a nice clean. I can do a little bit of work under the hood. I can drive it for a little bit. And I got pretty good at finding cars that were fun to drive. But then I could also then flip in about 6 or 12 months and either get all my money back or make a little bit. Now I can sustain my addiction, right? While learning about all of these quirky used cars that over the years developed their own character. Now, I mean, some of the cars were as cheap as $400. Some of them were like $2,500. I would love to expand that threshold higher, $5,000-$10,000 cars. If you just kind of watch the market, you get an idea for what things are going for. You can kind of sustain this system where every 6 or 12 months you're getting into something else. And that's been a highlight of my life, because I mean, through this, I've had several old Toro shows. I love those cars from the beginning, but being able to buy some well-used models gave me a little bit more experience just on the mechanical side. And if it's not something you're driving every day, even if it's sitting outside for a while, who cares? Let it sit outside for a while you're learning about what it takes to fix it up. And if you're going on a smaller investment like that, you're not going to be out a lot of money. I think I lost a little bit of money on a couple cars over the years, but through this process, I had a Mark II GTI 16 valve that opened my eyes, because I was never a Volkswagen guy, but I found one for $400 that was pretty rusty. It's like, well, we'll give this a shot. And it's like, after driving that, okay, I get it. Now I see why people absolutely love these cars. I had my first Mustang experience doing this. I bought a Mustang LX 5-liter convertible. Has a joke for a winter car, because it's like, what's the best, worst winter car you could ever think of? A rear-wheel drive Mustang convertible that'll never go through snow. Guess what? I put some weight in the trunk. I put skinny Nokian Hakkapeliitta snow tires on it. It was a freaking tank in the snow. The experience blew my mind to the point where I was like, okay, after that, I got a 500 horsepower Cobra. Now I still have another Mustang in the garage. I bought it as a joke. I never would have done that had I not just been going through this cycle of every 6 to 12 months. Well, let's just go find something new. One of the cars that I missed the most was a 2000 Chevy Metro, a little three-cylinder Metro. I don't know what it was about that car, that the three-cylinder engine just, it sounded angry. It wasn't fast, but it's like I could just pick it up and put it in my pocket. I felt like I wore the car. It was a 5-speed. It was just fun. It wasn't fast. It was fun. And I never would have expected that had I not given it a shot. So that's sort of my advice there. It follows on your second option of getting a little bit more involved on the mechanic side. Fortunately, I mean, if you don't have friends that already know about cars, YouTube is a wealth of knowledge. Some good, some bad. But I mean, as you go through YouTube, I mean, has an old Ford engineer, friend of mine who's no longer with us, used to say, it's just nuts and bolts, man. Don't suck yourself up. It's just nuts and bolts. Just pay attention. Understand what you're taking apart. Have some reference points. If you have the ability to put a lift in your garage, you're already a gazillion times better off than I was, because I was doing this like while I was still going to college, just because I just got so addicted in the excitement of shopping and finding a car and not even necessarily being that interested in the car itself, but like, okay, this seems really cheap. I feel like I can do this and I can tweak this and I can fix that and I can drive it for a while and then I can sell it, make a little bit of money, move on to something else. Some cars didn't mean that much. I had a 96 Sunfire that really kind of didn't mean much, but that Sunfire stepped me into another 90. It was a 1991 Taurus show, or no, it stepped me into the 93 Taurus show that I ended up having for 10 years. To this day, that's the longest I've owned a car. Anyways, we're going a little bit long. Well, that's my advice. If you have the ability, you know, a little bit of space, don't worry about getting the super high dollar stuff. Go out, find yourself just a neat car, $5,000 or so, that maybe, you know what, it could use a little bit of work. Sometimes even if you just clean them up, just give the car a good cleaning, and anybody can do that. Give a car a good cleaning, make it look like somebody cared about it. You can turn it around and at least get your money back out of it. That's my suggestion. Start there. Start with something that maybe looks interesting or something that you always kind of wanted, that's down on that lower range. Dip a toe into the pool. You might get totally addicted like me. And by the way, I've had this Mustang now for 6 years and I need something else.
Yeah, I know it's not going to be around much longer. Okay. But before we transition, I just want to do, because I didn't really get to address Tim's second question.
Yeah, go ahead.
So Tim, the more I think about it, the more I kind of realize you are in a really lucky position. So you have your Accord, your wife has your SUV, you have two kids apparently. So just push all that to the side. That's the practical side. Keep everything there. Don't touch it. You have the Z4M though, and you're going to go take it on a track day and you're going to have fun with it. But at some point in time, the Z4M is just, the Z4M, you're going to just feel like you want something else. And that's totally understandable. And you're lucky that you're in this position. You have a brand new, practically Accord. You have an oldish SUV, that those fulfill the utilitarian need. And then you already have this fun car. And so I was looking things up, and granted, you're in Cincinnati. I'm up here in Bowling Green, but we're both in Northwestern Ohio. And let me pull this up here. So pulled up Z4.
Bruce is shopping for you.
This
is special gold right here, guys.
Yeah. So you are in Southwestern Ohio. I'm in Northwestern Ohio. But around me, a Z4M Roadster is anywhere between a $20,000 and $30,000 car right now. So when you sell it, you're not going to get quite that back. But let's call it 22. You might get more than that. You might get less. Let's call it 22. So I was looking at 911s, which you said that you were looking at. Hold on one second.
Well, you're looking that up. I've got
it right here. We're here.
Oh, you got
it.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
And again, so a 911 these days, a convertible, which I know our boss Brandon Turkus says is the worst 911 for $25,000. But again, for very low 30s, you're basically there. So enjoy your Z4. Enjoy it. Drive it. And then when things kind of, when you get bored with it, your 911 is basically at a very affordable point away mm-hmm. from where you are now. You've got a very nice car. And yeah, you want a 911? Trade it in for a 911. Granted, all of these are the 996, so you have to be careful with them because the engines are grenades waiting to go off. But
sometimes.
Yeah, if they haven't been serviced, and there are fixes for that, and their fixes are known. But you're in a good position. Like, I understand, like, you really like this BMW Z4, but when the time comes and you want to trade it in, you've got a really good starting place that you can sell the Z4 for 22, 23, and then add a little bit of money to that, and you've got your 911. Or take that, like, you know, Aston Martin, or there are a lot of cars that they're not going to be the latest and greatest. We're looking at, what, 2002, 2003, 2001 here. But from that era, you can get something that was an exotic at that time and just basically use your Z4 as capital, as income that's already there, and just trade it forward and get whatever it is you want. So mm-hmm. you're in a good position, man. Enjoy your Z4, and when the 911 itch finally takes you over, take it. Hell, I wish I was in your position. You're up on me. So
yeah,
enjoy.
And if you do want to take the other road and dip a toe into the used scene and try to do some work, I wouldn't recommend starting German. German can be a little finicky to work on. Yeah. I would actually recommend either starting American or Japanese.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
There are. Oh man, I mean, you could find just a whole bunch of 80s and 90s Japanese cars right now that have some fun factor that haven't exploded in value yet.
First one that comes to my mind, Prelude. Preludes have not appreciated like the rest.
Right. And if you want to go just a little bit older, like an A70 Supra, those are just starting to creep up.
Just, yeah, you got to get there basically now.
But you got to jump in there now. But yeah. I mean, an A70 Supra, I mean, that's going to be pretty easy to wrench on.
Yep.
Like a Z32 300ZX, those are starting.
Right, I was thinking Z31 300ZX,
or a Z31. Yeah. But now we're talking about stuff that I love, right? So
I mean, maybe
it's different for you, but that's my recommendation. I wouldn't start German. They can be a little dicey sometimes.
Unless you have the money and you have a trusted mechanic nearby and you don't mind handing it over to them. I have a mechanic here in town who is very, very good. He has like E-type Jags and stuff in there. And then I pull my Mini in and he does like, he is very good with stuff and I would trust him with it. So if that's your situation, maybe, but yeah, otherwise I would steer away from German or European, maybe in general.
What do you mean? Go get a nice Jaguar XJ12. dive right into that.
Yeah.
I mean like two or three mortgages on the house and you should be set.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
thanks for writing in. And
Tim, I hope, please send us a reply. Tell us if we helped you. Tell us if we are a bunch of morons and you're getting a divorce now.
I can't believe those guys.
Yeah. I want to know, like, are we vaguely helpful? Cause I want to be helpful, but everyone's different.
And email us your thoughts, podcast@motorone.com. Is there a car you're looking at? Do you have questions like Tim? We'll try like hell to answer them. We might just end up telling you to get the cars that we want, but we're always going to give it a shot.
Yeah.
Speaking of cars we want, this, as I said at the very beginning, we've had a lot of listener requests over the last several months about some possible segments for the second half of our show. And mm-hmm. for the month of December, as automotive news generally slows down, we generally don't see quite as many debuts. Automaker executives are out for a holiday vacations, so it can be kind of quiet. We're going to try to jump into one of these every week here through the month of December. And we're going to start with one that came up a while ago. And apologies, I can't remember exactly who submitted it. But it was automakers that are now gone, defunct, bankrupt, that should come back, or that we would like to see come back. And yeah, I mean, so many have gone away, especially just in the last 10, 20 years. There's certainly plenty to pick from. And Bruce and I came up with a few, and we're just going to, this is totally unscripted here. The whole thing's unscripted, but I mean, it's like, we haven't really talked about this much at all other than, hey, let's do this. So, let's do this. Do you want to go first? Give me a brand that you want to see come back.
Okay. So since we don't have a lot of time, and since I prepped this and I just find it hilarious, and I honestly think it is, it's not necessarily, it's a brand I want to come back only because I want the competition to exist. So I'm going with AMC, American Motors Corporation.
Nice. I almost picked AMC. I almost did.
I almost did Studebaker, and then I almost did Hudson, and then I ended up going with AMC. And for anyone who's not familiar, AMC started in the 1950s. They were Nash Kelvinator and who did they merge with? I just had it up in my mind. Oh no!
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I can't think of it either. But
it's it was the merger of Nash and someone else, and they became AMC, the American Motors Corporation.
Yep.
And over their life, starting from the 1950s, they were always kind of on their back foot compared to Chrysler, GM, and Ford. But that forced them to do some super interesting things. So One of the first things that they really got into was that they had inexpensive vehicle brand under their kind of umbrella called Rambler. And Smith, I pulled this image specifically for you because I know you would love it. So here is the Ramble Rebel 8 station wagon. And can you identify what's behind it for me?
Well, let's take a look here. That would be, is that going to be, that's either the F-102 or the F-106. I think it's an F-10.
I was thinking six.
I think it's the F-10. They're so similar. It's very difficult for me to tell the 102 and the 106 apart.
Anyway, but you can see here. Yeah, so here's the sedan version with its just little tiny wings. And here is the wagon. And you've got, you know, presumably dad like checking out the planes, and then mom in the wagon with all the kids.
Yep.
And I just thought it was a cool press image. But so Rambler was kind of their budget brand. And then there were also later AMC badge products. Hold on one second here. The one that my family owned, by the way, was the AMC Eagle wagon.
I remember that. That the very, very prominent car.
Yeah, so this was arguably, could we call this the first crossover in its own way? In that, you know,
a lot of people do.
It was four-wheel drive. It was an all-wheel drive, four-wheel drive wagon. And you can see here, it's just a station wagon on stilts, but it's driving on the dirt. It was great for snowy places because it had that ability. I remember ours had wood paneling on it. They did really interesting things. And so I know we don't usually get political on this show, but I have to pull up perhaps the most infamous Rambler or an AMC ever got. And this is from 2002. And I'm not saying whether you have to support him, hate him, like him, whatever, but Mitt Romney, whose father, George Romney, ran AMC, referenced one of their cars in a political ad. And I find it hilarious because of the fallout from it. So we are watching this now. I'm hitting play, and I'm just going to play the portion where they talk about the ad. And this is him and his wife going to prom. And I'm hoping the audio airs. And if not, you can see the closed captions are on the bottom.
Real date.
The night of the senior prom.
Mitt pulls up.
Night of the senior prom.
Goofy looking car.
Was an AMC Marlin.
He was a little about it.
And awful.
He was very romantic.
So if the audio didn't air there, Mitt Romney went to his senior prom in an AMC Marlin and referred to it as a funny little car or a funky little car. And this became a hot button political issue when he was running for governor. And here, let me find it.
I'm just thankful that you came up with AMC, because I didn't have AMC on my list, and I was actually feeling really guilty about not having AMC on my list, because I was like, that's one that really does need to come back, but I want to see these others more, you know?
Yeah. And so this is coming from his campaign or his opponent's campaign spokesperson at the time, who said the fact that Romney was embarrassed by his brand new car shows how out of touch he is with the regular working people. And this is from Adrian Durbin, O'Brien's campaign spokesperson. And this is in the Deseret News, September 27th, 2002. So thanks, Google, for copying that. But yeah, it's just hilarious that Mitt Romney went to prom in an AMC Marlin because his dad ran the factory, and that became a hot button political issue. Jesus, what would that be? 30 years later? Every bit of 30 years later.
The wonderful world of politics. That's why I like to talk cars.
Exactly. All right, your turn.
My turn, Bruce. I mean, you probably know what I'm going to come up with here for my first pick.
Is it Mercury?
No, it's okay. Not Mercury.
It's not Mercury.
It's got to be Pontiac.
Oh,
We need Pontiac back in the worst way.
Yeah. I prepared this as well. So cool.
And not just because I'm a huge fan of the Smoking the Bandit Trans Am, you know, the 77, 78 Trans Am special editions. Mm-hmm. You've got all kinds of classic vehicles, the GTO, Bonneville Grand Prix, even Fiero. I think Fiero would make an awesome little electric sports car. Mm-hmm. And when you look at General Motors right now, once upon a time, I don't know how many people know this, but back in the 50s and 60s, I mean, there's this kind of big overarching plan where General Motors, they wanted customers for life, like their entire life. I mean, they still want that now, but like, they had their brand structured to where, okay, when you're younger and you don't have as much income, we get you into a Chevy, just a nice, cheap, dependable, reliable Chevy. Doesn't have a lot of frills, but it's your Chevy. And then from there, you know, when you're doing a little bit better, we can move you into an Oldsmobile.
Actually just looking this up. Pontiac was supposed to be shipped between Chevy, Pontiac, and then Oldsmobile.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's right. Or if you want something a little sporty, you know, we get you into Pontiac. And then when you're a little bit further along, now we're moving you up into Buick. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, maybe you're mid-level manager now, maybe you're in your 40s and we got you up here into the Buick. And then when you're king of the hill, we move you into Cadillac. And that was their legit strategy. They wanted their customers for life. So
they called it a car for every pocketbook. Yep. Was the thing. And that started in the 1930s.
Yep. And then when, obviously when things got bad in the noughties there, Oldsmobile went away, Pontiac went away. There was an argument that Oldsmobile, I think, was a little redundant, but Pontiac still, it carried a level of excitement that you weren't really getting with just straight Chevrolet. You weren't really getting it with Buick, and it's still that way to this day. I mean, you have the Chevrolet Camaro, you have the Chevrolet Corvette. And that's pretty much it. As far as something interesting or exciting. If you just want something, you know, 25, 30 grand, that's kind of fun. You're not remotely looking at really anything from General Motors. Mm-hmm. And Pontiac could fill that role, not necessarily with a new Trans Am, which would be, I mean, it was always a twin with a Camaro, and we know Camaro is going to go away. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, something fun, like we have right now, like the Hyundai Elantra N, little sports sedan that's 30 grand. Pontiac could be doing things like that. Pontiac is, if I had just one automaker to bring back, Pontiac would be it. And I think there's a very strong case that GM needs some sort of excitement kind of division, sort of like the Chrysler has done with Dodge, or I guess Stellantis now has done with Dodge.
That's exactly the argument I was going to make about it, is that when Pontiac died, you had the G8 models, you had, well, slightly before that, you had the Revive GTO. Basically, they were taking the Australian rear-wheel drive models, and they were kind of giving them a performance twist and selling them in the United States. And that would be perfect against Dodge today. Maybe also you take a Traverse or an Equinox, you revise the Aztec after kind of the popularity it's gotten from Breaking Bad. But no, that is exactly the argument that I was going to make, is that Pontiac would have been the perfect Dodge competitor for General Motors. You let Chevy do mainstream volume sales. You turn Pontiac into your rear drive performance brand and reap the benefits. You could bring back, like you said, you could bring back the Firebird, that just, you know, use the Camaro just like you would
have. Firebird would have been a no-brainer. But I mean, gosh, Bonneville, Tempest, it doesn't even have to necessarily be just a straight rear-wheel drive car either. Mm-hmm. You know, anything that's just more than an Equinox, you know, or of course they don't make the Cruze anymore, but yeah, I mean, just there's nothing particularly thrilling at, you know, under the General Motors umbrella other than Corvette, which, sorry, even at 60 grand, that's untouchable for a lot of people.
Oh yeah.
You can get a Camaro, but
not for long,
because I think it's just gotten kind of stale. Just really isn't the variety there. So that's my choice. We got time to do one more each, don't we?
Super quick. I have like one photo. This is totally off the top of my head. And anyone who knows me is going to know I'm about to say this. I wish Saab could come back. Saab was special to me.
Thank you. Saab was on my list.
Saab, they did something different. You know, no other vehicles looked like a Saab. You know, they were front wheel drive, but they had these weird transmission layouts. You always put the key in the center console and turned it. And those were the key thing happened forever, but even the later ones under GM, they always were a little bit different. My mom had a Saab 9.3, and that was just a really good car. The only reason she ever got rid of it is because parts got hard to find, but I drove it several times, like even on the highway. And despite that one having, I think it had the 2.0 liter turbo rather than a 2.3, although I could be wrong. It was the best word I could describe it is zippy. Like, it wasn't fast. You know, you would never call it like a super performance car, but if you were just passing people normally on the highway, it did that well. The suspension was soft without being like wallowy. It was just the right balance between sporty and softness. Like, it just did everything right. And I had one in high school, and it just had just a dumb amount of cargo space. I remember when I owned it, my parents and I were moving houses, and you could take out the rear portion and just fill the back up with boxes and stuff because of the way it was designed. They were just great cars. And you know, technically Saab is not dead. I think the brand is now owned by someone else, but they're never going to be what they were.
Yeah, it's just the brand that exists. They officially went bankrupt in 2011. I think the last car was 2014. Bruce,
those last 9.5s are gorgeous. I got to pull that up real quick. The very, very last Saab 9.5. They basically took the design of the old 9.9, stretched it, modernized it, and they came up with something really, really cool here. Hold on.
And thank you for bringing up Saab, because Saab was on my list. I compiled four. Saab was either number two or number three. I hadn't really decided which. But yes, I mean, you hit all the points right on the head. Of all the automakers, and we can even go back to what we were talking about at the beginning of this program with BMW, trying to do something just for the sake of being different. Saab just somehow always had that secret. They always had something that just made
them. Here was the final 9.5, and just, it's a weird looking car, but
it's weird in a good way. Whereas
real quick here is what they were inspired by, which is the Saab 9. Here's a good side angle of the 9.9. Sorry, I'm getting an image ready as I'm talking here.
No. When you look at this car,
you're looking at that, and then here you can see kind of what inspired it.
I mean, it still has a modern look, but it's still distinctly Saab. Yeah. And whatever witchcraft they did to make sure they were always recognizable. I mean, I guess it's like a, you know, a Porsche 911. You always know a 911. But then again, it's not like it changes that much over time.
But the thing with Saab is that it got swallowed up by GM, but yet it still kind of remained special. Whatever, yes. I don't know what machinations, whether GM was never watching what they were doing in Sweden or whatever, that they were, even when they were owned by GM, there was something special about them, which is.
Yeah, they still had that identity.
But yeah,
very rare. Thank you so much for bringing that up. Oh, I definitely anytime. Want Saab to come back. I'm going to go with my last one here. Bruce, you said right off the bat when we started this, you picked Mercury. Mercury is on my list, but I'm not going to choose it this time around. There's something else that I want to see come back. And I think this would just be extravagant and amazing. And it could open up just a whole new realm of American luxury performance. Let's bring back Duesenberg.
Oh, Duesenberg. Okay.
Duesenberg disappeared in 1937. A lot of people say that the phrase "it's a doozy"
yep.
came about because of Duesenberg. Yep. Not really. The phrase was around before Duesenberg came out, but Duesenberg helped move that phrase along just because these cars were so just opulent and powerful
ahead of their time,
like, and at ahead of their time. Duesenberg, that was the pinnacle.
Yeah.
Period. Full stop.
They were nicer than a Rolls Royce. They were nicer than any.
The most luxurious vehicle you could have in the 30s was a Duesenberg. Of course, America in the 1930s, not a great place for people spending money.
In the early 30s, up before 32, things were great.
Well, I mean, yeah, things got pretty bad in a hurry. Yeah. And then, of course, you had World War II come around. So, you know, Duesenberg went away. But you know what? Bugatti went away and then they came back.
Yep.
Could you envision
Maybach went away and it went back. Hork went away and now it's back.
Could you imagine a modern Duesenberg has a Bugatti competitor? I can. Wouldn't that be fantastic? And Duesenberg
have to do it in terms of luxury rather than a performance. I think you'd have, not necessarily. Have to have both.
The Duesenberg, the SJs with their supercharged engines, they were among the fastest cars of the period.
That's true.
And they had V16 engines in some of those.
Yes, they did.
So there you go. How about an American competitor to Bugatti? Duesenberg. Bring it back. Am I wrong? Am I wrong, folks? No. Podcast at motor1.com. Am I crazy? Yeah. I'm always crazy. But man, there's nothing to me that stands out like a Duesenberg or the Auburn. I've always been a big fan of the classic Auburns. I thought about Auburn for a minute and then I was like, no.
Yeah, go
let's,
big.
Let's have Duesenberg back as a Bugatti competitor. Something sleek and luxurious and just utterly amazing.
I'm going to do one. This is more of a shout out than an actual pick. This is one I almost picked, and that is Isuzu. And you would not believe how hard it is to find information on Isuzu in America. I got to give credit to this person on Drive Tribe, Sam Blackhon. He wrote this almost exactly a year ago. It says it went up 51 weeks ago. And he did a fantastic job of chronicling Isuzu in the U.S. I almost went with it mostly because of this car right here, the Piazza, it was the Isuzu Piazza. It was the Impulse in the United States. And then also I love the Via Cross, which we're looking at here. It's just such a stupid looking car. It's got fangs for some reason. Why does a car need fangs? It just does.
We need a picture of a Via Cross and an Aztec park next to each other.
Yeah. So I almost picked that. I didn't because it's not quite special enough because of the Piazza and the Via Cross. Other than that, not much. But Sam, credit to you. You did a fantastic write-up about Isuzu in the U.S. because I couldn't find anything else. So good on you, man.
Yeah, well done. And for whoever submitted this, I apologize. We can't remember exactly who it was, but thank you for submitting this idea a long time ago. We're going to be going through other listener submitted request ideas for segments this entire month. Mm-hmm. And if you have something in mind, email us podcast@motorone.com. Comment on our article at motorone.com. Comment on our YouTube video at Motor One Podcast. Reach out to us. We are listening and we'd love to hear your comments. We love to hear new segment ideas. Like I said, we're going to be going through other segments here the rest of the month. Mm-hmm. You know what, if we get something in email tomorrow or the next day, for a new suggestion, we could toss it into the mix too.
Totally.
With that in mind, Bruce, I think it's getting that time.
You stole my thunder, but yeah, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. We appreciate every comment. I apologize. With Thanksgiving last week, I had some family staying with us. I wasn't able to comment. Obviously, you can see that we looked at everything. I just wasn't able to comment and reply. So I apologize for that. But, you know, in general, we do try to do that. And we appreciate all of that. And like Smith said, MotorOne.com is the website. Motor One Podcast on YouTube. Please like and subscribe. It helps. I know it's stupid easy. It's 2 button clicks if you haven't done it, but it helps us so much. You have no idea how much all of that helps. So if you can, please do it. But otherwise, good night. And I hope you enjoyed the show.
We'll see you there. Bye-bye.